Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And rewind to Dynamite time. We are going to be getting into tonight's show from Phoenix, Arizona. But welcome all to the free portion of Rewind to Dynamite. Do want to make a note to everybody out there that on Tuesday, I got together with Jordan Goodman and Braden Harrington. We sat down and we went through 50 years of Saturday Night Live, including a review of Sunday's three-hour special. And that is now up on the Post Wrestling Cafe. So if you want to go, you can subscribe for $6 a month, or you can just drop down $3 to get the show. No commitment required. But we ended up we hit record way and we just went, and this one turned into a 3.5 hour history of this franchise. I did not think we were going to go so lengthy, but I really enjoyed doing this show with Braden and Jordan. This was among my favorite shows I've done.
So, you know, John, as being as busy as he is, I think any request of him to do an extra podcast is at least one that I really kind of hold back on. So, you know, when he suggests to do a show himself, you know how much he wants to talk about something, and you can tell that passion comes across when you're listening to this podcast between he, Braden, and Jordan. Like you sounded like you had a lot of like thoughts, just not just about this particular anniversary special, just about SNL in general, that you really wanted to get out. And that's why I think we've received great response to this podcast so far.
Well, I hope people enjoy it. I had a really great time doing this show. Jordan and Braden were awesome co-hosts to have on this show, because all of us follow the show, but we all have like different aspects of the show that we have liked, what we've disliked, players that have worked. So and towards the end of the show, we kind of do a little like history piece going over our favorite sketches, hosts, and performers over the years as well. So that is up on the Post Wrestling Cafe and on the Poison Rana Patreon feed. If you want to check out either of those, you can grab that show with a tremendous intro as well, produced by the one and only Bray D.
Mm-hmm.
Courtesy of probably some help from Ben Tramer.
The mysterious Ben Tramer, who pretty much does all the
music. He did not appear on the show, unfortunately. I tried to get him.
He did? Okay. Yes.
Also, we have Pollock and Thurston up today. We had Aaron Rupar, who's a very popular political reporter from Public Notice. He was on today chatting about Linda McMahon's Senate hearing last week. We didn't get into any SNL favorites with him, but we chatted about Linda McMahon, the hearing last week, the NBC article as well, and then getting into Brandon Thurston's wheelhouse. He explained to us how Netflix calculates the viewership data for Raw every week, because he got a response from Netflix who broke it down into like all these different formulas of how they take the live programming that is WWE, which is very unique. They're not monitoring other shows like this, where you have this, Like, there is not a set time that you are sitting down to watch 95% of the programming on Netflix, but WWE, you are. So it's a very interesting breakdown. And all of the other business news and notes going on around the world of professional wrestling. So that is up, and Wei and I will be back Thursday on the cafe chatting NXT TakeOver New Orleans. That amazingly happened 7 years ago with Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa in the main event in an unsanctioned match. And along with that, Aleister Black challenging Andrade Cien Almas for the NXT Championship, a ladder match to crown the first men's North American champion, and Shayna Baszler challenging Ember Moon among them. So all of that will be discussed as we turn back the clocks to 2018 in New Orleans, no less. Maybe a young Ricky Saints was watching this show earlier in his wrestling career.
He was certainly there for the night afterwards at WrestleMania. Was he at TakeOver? I mean, I don't know if we know.
All right, so that will be up on Thursday, and then Wei and I also back Friday night with Rewind to SmackDown. On to Dynamite, we head to the Arizona Financial Center, the Arizona Financial Theater in Phoenix, with an announced crowd. Well, WrestleTix reported crowd of 2,996, and I thought what was so interesting about this setup, Wei, is that because this is like a concert theater, we had a different like camera positioning here, where this was very much like Daly's Place during the pandemic, where the hard cam is facing the entrance rather than the side of the ring, and it just made for just a different setup. And I thought they got great use out of this building, just with interesting stuff like the way Moxley came out and they followed him into the arena, and getting there was a lot of like handheld at the sides that they relied on more because they didn't have a hard cam on that side. So it was just an interesting production, and I thought overall a positive one, with a crowd that, while I'm not going to put it at the level that we got in Austin, Texas last week, this was still like a really lively crowd, I thought overall, and continued the string that they have been having, I think, where the environment that we had talked about being a negative for all this time, it's been a positive, and I thought it continued tonight.
These crowds have been good, and I don't know if it's just the copycat effect after like this string of like really strong crowds from Texas and also from Australia, but you know, getting out of those places, I thought even tonight was still a pretty great sounding crowd. In terms of like pacing of the show, I actually found like the pacing a lot more relaxed. You know, like I didn't feel like this was as frantic of a show that was like kind of as dense as Dynamites usually were. And I don't know if that was just me or if others felt it as well, but I actually quite enjoyed the pace of the show.
It was only four matches over the 2 hours. I went to check. We had like seven matches last week, which was on the very, very high end of Dynamite. There were quite a number of non-like physical segments, like talking segments that they had throughout this. Also on commentary tonight, Excalibur joined by Ian Riccaboni and Taz. Tony Schiavone is there, and he is going to be doing Collision with Jim Ross, they noted. Jim Ross was here for the main event and then noted he will be back on the Collision taping, which, again, they were taping Collision right after Dynamite on Wednesday. So Excalibur immediately refers to Grand Slam as one of the greatest nights in AEW history. And I thought they did like a pretty good job of, instead of, well, that show's in the rear view, we're just moving on, everything's about Revolution, like they dedicated time to really putting this over. They had a great video package, including, to me, the clip that you would want replayed the most. And that's that crowd singing along to Cope's theme, which, to no one's surprise, this crowd copied when he came out, and I bet you that is now going to be a thing for Copeland's entrances.
I actually thought that they probably should have tried to facilitate a moment for tonight's show that would have allowed.
They didn't pause because it was the franticness of like Cope running off the Death Riders, but the crowd, like they wanted to sing it, and they were, but they were kind of battling with the action.
In hindsight, I bet you Tony would have, you know, instead just had the song play along so that they could do the beatdown to the song, like New Jack style, like they've done in the past. I thought that would have made probably a great moment.
So MJF and Hangman Page are out for the face-to-face, and we get the whole origin of these two, going back to Double or Nothing 2019, the first show in the company's history when they were both in the Casino Battle Royal, which was won by Paige, where MJF says, "You screwed me with a cheap shot, and I had to work my way all the way back up, beating all of your favorite wrestlers. And then who did I beat for my first Dynamite Diamond ring? It was you, Hangman. And then I won the main event of All In 2023. I was the best and longest reigning AEW champion ever." Paige says, "Do you think I don't know who you are? I know exactly what you've done, but for all that you've won, you're still not happy because you still haven't won something from them," referring to the fans. And MJF gets all flustered and yells at them, "Shut up!" MJF says, "You know, it's funny how the fans seem to decide who is morally redeemable and who is not," when he points out that Hangman drank people's blood, attacked legends backstage, used a syringe on another man, and burned a man's house down. This is the moment I would have loved to have just had, like, one of those moments where someone's watching with, like, a significant other that doesn't watch wrestling and just listens to this laundry list of deplorable actions that have occurred. Somehow attacking a legend right up there with involuntary syringe usage and drinking other men's blood on top of arson. But MJF asks, "But he's a good guy, right?" So MJF asks Paige, "Do you love yourself after ending the career of your mentor, Christopher Daniels?" And Paige stands up and is furious at him bringing up Daniels' name, who he says is 10 times the man that you are. And in the line of the night, "And if I could, I would rip my own spine out and give it to Christopher Daniels." Like, I guarantee you he would not want you to make that gesture. That's a wonderful sentiment, but that would not help.
I don't think we have the technology.
We're not quite there yet. No, not quite. They couldn't even do that in Severance. And he gave his body, died a warrior's death, and he took care of pro wrestling even when pro wrestling didn't take care of him. Christopher Daniels is the best of us. MJF, if your career ended tonight, what would they say about you? Would they say that you were a credit to the sport or a selfish coward that took shortcuts? I know what's right and wrong, and I may have told 100 lies over the past 5 years, but I never lied to the people. I confront my problems. I worked for everything I've achieved while you've been cheating and scheming. And MJF is reflecting on these words and then mocks his speech, saying that history books don't care as long as you get the job done. "Paige, you were the golden boy before this company even began. All I had was a scarf and a mic. I'm better than you." And he says that, "Name one thing that you're better than me at." And Paige responds, "I am real." And MJF says, "I have no problem being the bad guy." And they tease going to fight, but they had already promised no physicality. So security is circling the ring, and MJF spits at Hangman. And then as Hangman goes for MJF, he's pulled away by security. And it ends with Daniels running out, stopping Hangman. And Hangman stares at Daniels, and Daniels tells him, "This is what I was fighting for the whole time. You know who you are." Man.
He's real.
This was some deep shit.
I really like the segment. I do. I like AEW starting off with a big talking segment once in a while. Yes, I ultimately do prefer this company kind of being like letting the wrestling do their talking. But once in a while, you need to give me like the big sort of like star power making type of talking segment to let me know, let the audience know that the feud that I'm watching deserves this sort of spotlight, where I don't just see them wrestle, but I can hear them talk and I can get their character motivations as well. I thought the segment achieved that. You know, I liked MJF trying to tie this back to the very first Double or Nothing. I like the big picture debate that they had of MJF trying to maybe tell us that, you know, Hangman is the chosen one while he wasn't chosen, chosen by the company, but also chosen by the fans. I wonder if there was more he could have done to maybe tie in his most recent less than favorably reviewed, you know, babyface, tail end of his babyface run with maybe Paige's run at the very same time, which was like the tail end of essentially a heel run that the fans willed into becoming a babyface run. I wonder if there's this contrast he could have made a little bit more there.
I kind of like the way that this segment ended, where that was your conclusion of what MJF was referring to here, is that I, like, you and I have complained so many times about this goddamn Adam Cole feud and calling it out that I'm glad they're not just blatantly referencing this again. But you're left to have that conclusion that the fans did not take to him in this babyface role, and they did take to Hangman, who was doing all of these despicable things while MJF was legitimately trying to endear himself to the audience. I think you were left with that conclusion without having to spell it out.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I do think, though, a little bit of hand-holding and pushing people towards that direction would have probably made that point a little bit clearer if that's what they were intending. But, you know, ultimately, I felt the segment worked. The Chris Daniels stuff, using him as a motivator for Paige. Initially, I wasn't so into it because, like, I saw no evidence of, like, Daniels being a mentor for Hangman Page. But there is evidence out there, and I believe, like, this is sort of rooted in truth. You know, they just haven't necessarily pushed it onto Dynamite television all these years. But for the purpose of this particular story, I do think it works, and I fully expect Daniels to get the shit beat out of him, maybe for good. Maybe he'll have his actual spine ripped out by MJF as a way to gain heat.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a great segment, and I think program-wise, I think this is the best program going in AEW at the moment. And it's
certainly ahead of the Death Riders story.
Like, look at where MJF was a month ago, and it just feels like he's in a hot program. It seems that he's got his mojo back with something he can sink his teeth into. I think in this last little bit, like, you can see what he is invested in and what he is not. And this seems to be something that has really, for both guys, Hangman is coming across like your big babyface star at a very high level here. And he's got a great partner here in MJF to work with.
So no mentions at all of Jeff Jarrett from MJF or vice versa at this point. Can we presume that was something that was that they wanted to do and then dropped?
Oh, dude, this is AEW. That's all coming back. Like, that's just back burner stuff.
So that was all intentionally just to kind of set things up for the future.
I think you're absolutely getting back to Jarrett will make his return probably when they're ready. Like, after this pay-per-view, I think you're 100% getting back to MJF and Jarrett at some point.
All right.
Renee is with the Undisputed Era as Roderick addresses Orange Cassidy, who he will be facing tonight in the International Championship Series match to determine who faces Takeshita next week. And they note how Kyle O'Reilly is friends with Orange Cassidy, but Kyle explains that the conglomeration is not so much a stable, it's more of a lifestyle. They had merch, but I guess that's the lifestyle brand that they were trying to sell.
Yeah, I guess so. I think this is the first mention of the conglomeration we've heard from at least Kyle since, like, the Undisputed Era's reformation, Undisputed Kingdom's reformation. So you can hold dual citizenship in that stable in the conglomeration, right?
I guess. Yes. I guess so. Yeah, it was all sealed with a hug later. Next week, Dynamite will be live coast to coast, where the show is going to be in San Diego. And we start off our first match. It's a trios bout with the Patriarchy against the Ops.
Yeah. Who now have a logo and some pyro. And I think an actual theme song.
Yes. Yeah. No, they got the full branding. This is both a stable and a lifestyle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They get a cheap shot on Shibata and get the heat on him for multiple minutes before he dropkicks Sabian out of the ring. Hook comes in, and then when Joe gets the tag, he gets his hands on Christian, and this crowd's going wild for it as Christian is trying to evade any kind of contact. He tries for the kill switch, but instead gets thrown to the floor, and Joe hits this big tope suicida. Crowd goes wild. Wayne's World is caught in the red rum as Shibata chokes out Sabian on the floor, and Joe holds Cage at bay, allowing Nick Wayne to tap out. And while the Ops is the name they are going forward with, Taz had his own suggestion that with these three guys, you're looking at an Escalade, a Bugatti, and a Mitsubishi 3000 GT with these guys.
Okay.
I prefer that as the naming convention. And I don't know which one's the Escalade, and which one's the Bugatti, but
I guess Joe would be the Escalade, Hook the Bugatti, and because he's Japanese, Shibata the Mitsubishi.
The 3000 GT? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess by, I mean, I wasn't going to assign him that just because of his origin, but yeah. You did.
Great Trios performance from the Ops here. Great Trios presentation of the Ops. You know, they're building a lot of momentum with this group. They all look cool. Like, none of them look kind of like... No one's really the fall guy in this. I guess if he had to pick one, it might be Shibata, but, like, no one's taking falls. Like, they're undefeated. They're all being booked to look strong. All three of them are booked to look cool. They gave him a nice showcase win here against, like, you know, a pretty, like, substantial heel faction. And I would suggest clearly setting them up for a Trios title shot against the Death Riders.
MJF and Hangman is officially announced for March 9th at Revolution. And there was a highlight of Bandido pinning Chris Jericho. This was part of the Global Wars Australia special that they ran on Honor Club Monday. And we go to Renee backstage with Jericho. And this was an interesting segment because Renee is just so just mocking of Chris Jericho, stating, "Have you accomplished what you set out to do by getting pinned by Bandido?" And Jericho is just pissed. He threatens to have Renee thrown out of this building, says, "No one here would have a job without me." And that's a fact, not pro wrestling rhetoric. And he's been too nice. People stop him in Brisbane for photos. And Bandido, you're the guy that's asked to take the picture. He rips up the bounty, stating he will face Bandido this Saturday on Collision because people are getting too comfortable with Chris Jericho. I was going to say Funkin' Dojo. Chris Funkin' Jericho. I thought this was a great promo from Jericho. And I think that overall, maybe this was his response to the Learning Tree getting like worst gimmick in the Observer Awards.
I don't know if he's the type to necessarily respond to criticism by changing. You know, like, if anything, he tends to double down. I mean, I just felt like this was, okay, we got a title match coming up. This is time to actually get serious, you know? And Jericho has shown that he knows when to do that.
Bandido, I like this promo. Like, I think it sets up, like, a more, you know, important, like, match for Saturday. And I think, like, this Learning Tree thing, whatever you feel about the gimmick, I don't think it's the worst gimmick in the world, but I think having, like, a bit of an edge to Jericho is more effective role for what he is doing here.
I agree. I think it needs to be established in more than just one promo 1 week, though, if you're trying to get people to take him seriously. You know, one promo isn't necessarily going to shift people's opinions about, like, how to look at modern day Chris Jericho in the Learning Tree. That said, despite everything that I think people might be saying about a Chris Jericho, he's still Chris Jericho. And when he's being paired up with a Bandido, it represents a big obstacle and a potential huge win for Bandido, you know? So there is certainly a potential of title change. I don't know if I would do it just yet. I kind of think the chase should be a little bit longer for Bandido to make it the journey feel a little bit more earned. But it's a spotlight for Bandido nonetheless.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Plus, two editions of Rewind Away. We will revisit Bret Hart's heel run in the WWF NXT TakeOver New Orleans from 2018. Plus, we have coverage of AEW Grand Slam Australia, New Beginning in Osaka, an Ask Away, Ask Us Anything mailbag show, and of course, Captain America 4 and Collision Course every single Saturday night. All that and more at postwrestlingcafe.com. And speaking of the Learning Tree, we go to the street fight with Big Bill and Powerhouse Hobbs, and they go up the aisle and into the stands, and Bill nails Hobbs with a sound mixer. Have you ever been hit with a sound mixer?
No, I have not.
So
no.
It's heavy.
Those things are very heavy, yeah.
So Big Bill gets a wrench, and dude, this was like the Three Stooges here with him trying to hit Hobbs with this wrench and just kept missing and hitting other objects. Bill finally connects with Hobbs and busts him open with the wrench. Brian Keith comes out, and steps are placed on top of the stage, and there's a table in the ring. Hobbs comes back with a trash can, punches a chair away from Brian Keith, and hits a one-handed choke slam, putting Keith through a table in the corner. And then we see Hobbs get the backpack that Big Bill had brought out, and he nails Big Bill with the backpack and then reveals what is in the backpack, and it's a bunch of bricks. Which, my question to you, Wei, if you were going to be hit with a brick, okay, you can't avoid being hit with it, would you rather be hit with the blunt object, or would you rather be hit with a backpack that contains the bricks? Because I'm taking that backpack 10 out of 10 times.
Okay, but a backpack can hold more than one brick.
John. It can.
I'm going to be hitting. So you could be maybe shielded by the thin fabric of a backpack, but you're going to be taking five bricks instead of just one. Are you sure about your choice?
Yeah, I'm still taking the five that are concealed versus one physical brick. Dude, if I threw a brick at you, you would be wanting that backpack.
No, I wouldn't. Not if there were five bricks in there.
I don't think this would be that bad.
Well, let's try next time.
Okay. All right. We'll do this. Bill then gets sent off the steps on the stage, and there are two tables on the floor, one of which has barbed wire all over it. He misses the first table, goes through the second table, thankfully, and he is tied up in the barbed wire to the point he cannot get to his feet, and he is counted out at 10, and Powerhouse Hobbs wins the street fight. Which, if ever you send a man onto a barbed wire table out on the street, that's the end.
Usually it's the end. Yeah. A very entertaining plunder match, I would say. You know, very satisfying stunts, some very consistent action, good crowd reactions, a decent level of violence with blood from Hobbs here.
Hopefully no one died in the process of this. They were these are big guys doing a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, you're right, cuz last time they just even had this we did have an injury to Hobbs, right?
Yeah, Hobbs was not cleared after their big parking lot brawl.
He looked great, and I think much like what they're doing with the ops and other baby faces on the show, they're doing a good job of making him feel like somebody that we should be paying attention to. So let's see if there's enough to keep them advancing him beyond now this Bill feud. Who's next for him? Jericho? Is that logical?
is Jericho next for everyone? Yeah, I mean, it could be. That's one. Personally, I mean, they did that great job with him with the Takeshita match that he came up short in, but looked really, really good in. I like Hobbs is one of those where it's a numbers game. Is he going to be in that rotation that is going to be in a prominent spot, or is it going to be like you get your featured program and then you kind of dial it back with him until it's time to reheat him up in 2 months or something like that? It's kind of those players that are kind of periphery ones. They get their big program, they get the blow off, and then you kind of simmer for a little bit. I don't know what they'll do here. Is that
really like how many spots should there be on a show with 4 hours of content time? Can they really not? When we always have the excuse of there not being enough airtime, not being enough spots, how do we advance people? Because nobody from the top is really kind of moving back down, you know? So how do we move people up a level, like in the case of a Powerhouse Hobbs?
Well, it becomes the difficult part if you are going to have certain people that are reserved for all these top spots and you are going to have your television time divided up among them. And there's kind of like none of that movement. It is tough to get like your fresher names in there unless there's something like an injury that takes someone out and you have that need to really elevate someone into those spots. But it's like this is a company of really just it's a juggling act of maintaining all these different names you have. It's like an Adam Cole is just like a random name in here, and he's like he's in like a mid card position at the moment, and there's lots of these ones you can do. It's sort of just making your decision on two people that okay, we're going all the way with this person and having that ability to go there, but it's trying to satisfy all these different personalities that you do have under contract and that you're paying a lot of money to.
But I think in the case of guys like Hobbs, I think they should be given priority, you know, because this is not the first time we've had Hobbs in this sort of similar position. This might be maybe among the furthest he's kind of been, but we all know, like in the case of like a Wardlow or whomever, you know, who might get to the spot, if you're forgotten about, if you're not in another prominent position following this, you're just going to be seen by the audience as somebody not to be taken seriously. So I think it's kind of critical for him to like actually, you know, be given a real push into an upper position from where he is right now.
And I'll just bring this up because it's a natural segue, is that like there is a lot of sympathy when you see some of these performers that just get iced. And when we're talking about this predicament, that even a Hobbs, who you're all in on, and it's just this kind of cluster of spots that are stuck, and we are trying to create a position for him, it's really tough to take a Ricky Starks, who we were just talking about, and if we know this guy, he had asked for his release, we know he's gone, what is the benefit to us of working out, like creating a spot for him when we know what the end result is? And that's, it's not to defend like just benching a guy for a year, but that is the argument on the other side of it, is that we have all these other talents that we're trying to elevate and get into big positions that are around for the long haul. And what are we gaining by someone that like to put all those resources into that we know is out the door when they get the first chance?
We need more airtime. We need another hour.
No, they don't. Because I think there's something to be said. Not to say everyone was watching Rampage, but I do find that this is a product that is easier to track. And it feels like a more focused show just with the elimination of Rampage, which is not like, I don't think Tony Khan was spending a whole lot of time booking Rampage every week. But it does feel like you have a more focused 4 hours as opposed to like the five, that it just was more scattershot. And maybe that's just coincidence, but I do not think the loss of Rampage has had any negative effect.
I don't think it's had any effect, period.
You don't see that there is, like, Rampage got dropped at the beginning of the year, and it does feel like the shows do have a better direction.
I would say, for the most part, what was on Rampage wasn't necessarily relevant to the big picture. And it being around or not being around, I don't know if it's really affected.
I can't say that one is the cause of the other, but it has coincided, I think, with the other two shows being strengthened, I think. Justin Roberts then makes the announcement of Double or Nothing. The crowd gave this a big reaction for a Double or Nothing. And we had Renee with Archer and Brian Cage. The Hurt Syndicate are not here tonight, but they will be at Collision, which was amusing. They're coming for the tag title, so probably Revolution. This seems pay-per-view worthy.
Sure. Yeah. It's an interesting match, one that'll push the Hurt Syndicate to become bigger babyfaces than they already are.
Then Timeless Toni Storm comes out. It's the big victory speech, and she is accompanied by Luther, and we get a spotlight on Toni in the ring. These are her words. "The whore you all adore, the slut you can't rebut, this tramp is your new champ." And the crowd cheered. You know, a generation ago, like, John Cena was just rapping these words and people were cheering them. So
what a way to open a promo. Amazing.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And that was the part where Wei was just probably chuckling, knowing I was going to have to repeat. She beat the woman from hell who broke her heart. Mariah May, you sick bitch. I'm so proud of you, Mariah, for giving me the fight of my life and then beating you with my small package. And you should have worn protection, because I railed you with the biggest package there's ever been. And Mariah May has been defeated, exiled, and compromised to a permanent end. She is the Osama bin Laden of the women's division. And then she just cuts to the camera and promotes Queen of the Ring coming out March 7th. And she needs to face the best women out there. She name drops Statlander, Willow Nightingale, and the leading candidate for Double or Nothing or Revolution, Wendi Richter, and ends it by stating, "For God is a woman and her name is Timeless." And Taz just thought this, I think this was Taz's promo of the year. He was just in awe of this performance.
I thought it was outstanding.
It's a hell of a promo.
I think she's the best pure character performer on this roster, you know? And I guess that's kind of like tough to define, because who, like, where does character begin and where does like somebody's real personality begin? But in Toni Storm's case, like, this feels like somebody straight out of a comic book or a cartoon, and she does it so incredibly well. And just not an ability you ever thought she had within her in her prior incarnation, certainly in the WWE at all. But in a segment like this, I thought every word and every line was so like creatively crafted and so wonderfully delivered and effortlessly funny. Like she is really one of the funniest people on this entire roster.
Would Brayden buy a t-shirt that read "The Whore You All Adore"?
Sure. He would. Yeah, he would. I think
would more people buy this? Could these be merchandise opportunities?
I don't think more people would buy it. I don't know if that shirt would be publicly acceptable in most contexts.
All right. Well,
yeah. You?
Then, no, I don't think I'd be walking around with the tramp is here or whatever their catchphrase would
be. The tramp is here. Who's next for Toni Storm? What's her plan? Like, did she gave you some direction?
I mean, I came out of Saturday and I thought that they would have Mariah come back, and you'd do a rematch between the two. And I think they will get there, but I don't think you're going to turn that around and do that in a couple of weeks. I think Mariah May, based on this promo, is probably Mariah May is going to be gone for at least some period of time. And there's, yeah. It's anyone like I. Maybe they got a hold of Wendi Richter.
I feel like maybe that's our big final culminating.
I hope they have something big for her because I don't know how big of a release Queen of the Ring is going to be, but it does come out that Friday before the pay-per-view, and that week you probably will have Toni Storm doing like...
Maybe Camille comes back.
Not the craziest idea that we could get Camille as a June Byers taking on...
I don't know how Camille performs in this movie, but I do wonder if she would have the acting chops to live up to at this point a pretty high bar set by Toni Storm and Mariah May. But you know, like she's been married to Mariah May for quite a while now, and there are a lot of other women that have kind of been more on the TBS side of things, TBS title side of things that I think could make for interesting matchups. So I'm curious to see what those feuds look like.
Out of nowhere, we get the announcement that Gabe Kidd will be on Collision. And there was an audible reaction to Gabe Kidd. So I'm very curious to see how the Phoenix crowd responds to him. Just based on Dynamite, I think that this will be a better reception than maybe some other markets or places that we've seen AEW go to where this wouldn't be as big of a reaction for him. But
This was a crowd that was very in tune with just like, you know, I would say AEW adjacent happenings. You know, like this is, I'm sure, a full arena of people who watch the Gabe Kidd Kenny Omega match and is fully aware of like sort of the renaissance Gabe Kidd is on. Mm-hmm. Now what's interesting is in that build up to that Kenny Omega match, Gabe Kidd has said a lot of things about AEW and Tony Khan. Now
Kidd is gonna have a manager with him.
Is he perhaps somebody who's about to be reinstated on the color commentary team?
Oh, maybe you save it for a different city and he comes out doing the Charlton.
Oh, goodness. Wow.
Those two coming out, electric heat.
Is Chris Charlton now the official advocate?
The Chris Charlton family. That could be the new faction.
I would love that.
Let me introduce you to my favorite kid.
That would be great. But no, I judging by this, like, I don't know, like, graphic, I mean, I don't sense we're going to get any sort of anti-AEW sentiment from Gabe Kidd, nor do I think, like, that would be conducive to, like, a
business. This is kind of like, the antithesis of, like, what Gabe Kidd should be doing for his New Japan character. Like, this is actually, like, right against his ethos that he was not going to be going to AEW and just eating catering and such. And, you know, he name dropped, like, Des Moines, Iowa, but Phoenix, Arizona, I will make that long trip for.
Bigger city. So. We'll see. Like, this is something that they're actually building and trying to set some expectations for. Is this going to be more than just a wrestling appearance? Will he be – hopefully he'll get a chance to speak. That's probably his biggest strength, right?
Yeah, hopefully it's an idea and it's not just, you know, he's coming in for a match and there's not really anything attached to it. So we will see when it airs Saturday, but those listening will probably have the spoilers by the time they're listening to this. Willow is upset As she tells Renee last week, she got cut off by your husband and was attacked by Marina Shafir. So what happens? She gets cut off by her husband and Marina Shafir attacks her again and just destroys her. So for the second week in a row, we're pushing Willow to the brink here. And Moxley.
And so Willow and Marina, you would think.
It seems like we're going to get Marina's like first match under this character. Maybe. I don't know if that's pay-per-view level or TV, but yeah, it certainly is enough that that's obviously where they are setting things up for. Moxley has the camera follow him to the ring as he announces that because he's champion, this is his arena, his cameras, his show, and no one lays down a challenge for me, not even Cope, who is not here tonight, he states, and he's going to finish the job if Cope shows up at Revolution. Now, I found it interesting that... they must not have had the footage of the finish from Saturday because they didn't replay it, nor did the announcers pay all that much attention to what happened in the Brisbane Brawl. I can't remember.
Just perplexing why they would have Copeland take the pin. I don't get it. I mean, yeah. He did allude to it. Moxley did allude to, I guess, leaving.
He said,
Copeland laying.
I did pop his head off with... the show, like Moxley didn't ignore it, but I did find it interesting. Like there was no easy way for the announcers to talk about it without it kind of like deflating this to me, because the way they are positioning this now is that, well, he had help by the form of Wheeler Yuta. Not even all of them. It was Wheeler, Yuta, and Shafir that got
Cope or Jay could have pinned Claudio. If you don't want to pin Claudio, then maybe Yuta should have been in that match, okay? Like, either way, it should have been the baby faces coming out on top. And then you could have Mox and the Death Riders lay him out after you could still get to this point.
I found it to be one of the more perplexing finishes and don't have any, answer to it either on this broadcast. So... Mox is running them down when all of a sudden Jay White comes out and Pac comes out from the back. So he's cornered. And then Cope's music plays. He is there. And Jay White and Cope fight them off as the crowd is singing Alter Bridge as this brawl is occurring. And we get this setup that Cope and Jay White have come up with where Jay White goes to do the Blade Runner to Claudio, and as he twists him, then Cope hits the spear, and then Cope brings out Spike. The Death Riders flee, and Cope says that, Moxley, this is not your arena. These are not your people. These are my people, and you're a coward. No nuts, no guts, and no spine. But if you ask nicely, Hangman might spare his, and I'm going to take out your goon squad one by one so there will be no backup you have at Revolution when I beat your ass. Now, I know that the idea here is that, okay, we were outnumbered in the Brisbane Brawl by Yuta and Marina Shafir, but given that I watched this match, I just felt like the level of anger that Cope had from this, from what was in general a fairly relatively clean loss, I don't know if the anger justified the actions that were taken by the Death Riders on Saturday. It's not like they, they lit this guy on fire or were threatening to, attack his children. You passed out to his finishing hold at the end of this all. I don't know. I didn't know. So why are you so angry? Like, what are you to be angry about?
He's challenging.
Because Marina was there?
He's challenging for the championship at the pay-per-view. He clearly there's some egg on his face from audience expectations of conventional booking.
Patterns, like, let's just go all the way. Everyone knows, Mox, that I don't lose clean on TV unless I've got my win coming for me at the pay-per-view. So you tune in and you're getting a new champion based on 50-50 booking.
Oh, goodness. Wow.
Which, for the record, I do not think is happening. But if that is the logic for this, that's like the only logic I've heard people throw at me. And that to me is not solid booking foundation. So I don't know. I think we're going to get a hell of a match between these two. But I really did not understand why you did what you did on Saturday.
I think he's winning the championship. I think Copeland is winning. Yeah, but mainly because of the Christian element, and because you do have to cash in on that contract at some point.
I'm not discrediting that happening. Like, that is a potential. I really don't like that idea.
Well,
So
I mean, what is it? Mox can always win the title back at some point, you know, before Darby comes back. Anyway,
great.
We'll see. So Cope is vowing to get rid of every Death Riders member one by one. We have 5 television shows. I wonder if he'll take up all that time. But it's promising, at the very least, a one-on-one match, Moxley versus Copeland for.
That's right. Yeah. So. Evolution. And you can get him going through, whether it's like matches or attacks on the various Death Riders. The question will be, like with Marina, like if that sets something up with like how you're going to take her out. Yeah. Willow, and maybe Willow becomes that utility for Cope as well. So that would make sense.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Renee interviews Mercedes Moné, who warns no more puppets, and she is now 15-0 as TBS champion. And they throw to Momo Watanabe, who they interviewed in Australia, and after winning the Women's International Cup at Wrestle Dynasty, she is choosing Mercedes for Revolution. And Moné cannot believe this and is making Momo fly all the way to Dynamite to say this to my face. What a heel move.
Yeah, it's a long flight, man.
I guess you just stay here then for the pay-per-view. But man, she's going to have to extend her stay now in the U.S.
You're right. Yeah, because she was here. Well, she was in Australia. That's not that long of a flight. But to come here next week, and then she's going to have. I guess she would stay for Revolution. That would make sense.
Yeah. So anyway, this. I mean, this is not go. At least if you do have Momo on a show or two before Revolution, you can hype her up a bit. Like, obviously, they're leaning on this just being a bell-to-bell great wrestling match. But I think you want to build this up to where you can, because this could be really great on Revolution. It's just, for most, it's going to be a relatively cold challenger to get over in. I would certainly have her do a match or two before Revolution if she's here for that 10 days or whatever.
100%. Yeah. I would say, I mean, I don't think Momo Watanabe is sort of like the household name that, you know, certainly not a Mina Shirakawa level, and certainly not even, I'm trying to even think like what a sort of like equal level that's appeared on Dynamite would even be. I think with her, you're going to have to do a little bit more work to introduce her to a Dynamite audience. Kate brought up a great point on our Grand Slam review about why we're doing this match. It makes sense why we're doing this match. It's the biggest match that I think somebody from Stardom could possibly have in AEW. But it made, just thinking back, it didn't really make a whole lot of sense why Athena had to be the one to give out her pin when she hasn't been pinned in a sort of singles capacity in many, many
years. I thought 100% that they were doing Momo and Athena after that match, and they didn't go that direction. And okay, if you look at it,
want to heat up the Tekla feud. I'm pretty sure now. But like it seemed like such a waste, you know, of an Athena pinfall.
It is, but it was also a loss that is just like totally forgotten by people. Like, I don't think it's diminished Athena. It was a waste, but I don't think it was some kind of detrimental one for her either, because it was just so under the radar in the grand scheme of things. But it was odd. Like, you had Persephone in that match that you would think would be the one that would be least averse to being the one to take the fall of the four. Statlander and Megan Bain just kind of had a monster versus monster match here, where they're both just kind of going at it like two bulls. We see a superplex by Statlander, but Bain rolls through. She hits the Falcon Arrow, so both are down. Bain is executing a deadlift German, and then Statlander just dumps her onto the edge. Bain pops up and suplexes Statlander into the ring. The crowd was getting into this, but then Penelope Ford shows up, shoving Statlander off the turnbuckle, and then, if you caught this, Penelope Ford took this plunge, tripping off the steps, and the camera didn't cover her fall, but hopefully she didn't kill herself falling here. But this leads to the finish as Bayne hits an F5, pinning Statlander to win the match. Match was fine for the time it had with interference at the end, which amazingly the ref missed. But this post-match way, that is what I want to discuss here, because this thing was odd. Ford attacks Statlander when Thunder Rosa comes to her aid. Megan Bayne's been, messing with Thunder Rosa as well. So she's got this chair, and Ford stands in front of Megan Bayne and is basically challenging her. Go ahead, swing it. And Thunder Rosa is, she's winding up with the chair, and then she half swings, and no one is going to block this. So she has to stop. And it's just like everything stands still. Thunder Rosa just looks like a fool here with this chair. The heels are basically saying, okay, you've got a weapon. Do something with it. And she can't. And then they have the world's weakest tug of war over this chair. And finally, the heels just exit the ring. And Thunder Rosa, just with no enthusiasm, throws the chair onto the stage right in front of the heels. I don't understand how this was so complicated and could. I've never seen a chair, a run in with a chair spot worse than this. This just looked like amateur hour to the highest degree. Like, no one was getting their hands up to block the chair, so Thunder Rosa can't swing it. It's like, what's going on here? How is this so hard?
Maybe, yeah, I'm assuming just a lack of rehearsal, a lack of coordination.
It felt like no one knew what the other was doing, and we were just improvising.
I'll be honest, I didn't think so much about it, John. It just felt like, the segment's over.
I rewound and watched this.
yeah. I mean, it didn't bother me that much. I'll be quite honest. But it probably could have been smoother, Yeah, the match itself, I thought was probably Bayne's. Well, it's her biggest build match to date, and I thought her most impressive performance. I thought they did a good job of establishing like the type of wrestler she is by having her pair up and overpower Statlander. And I thought she and Statlander delivered like a good meat match for the women's division.
Yeah, I think they've got something with Megan Bayne here. I mean, we will see if like she's put into like lengthier matches and has to do more. Like, certainly there are aspects to her game that are not as advanced, but I think that the audience seems to be into her. They're booking her well so far as like this monster. It kind of feels like she is sort of the, what they kind of had envisioned for Camille is being played out now with Megan Bayne to be kind of this kind of new monster of the division.
Yeah. I haven't really like seen so much of her speaking, Megan Bayne, but I wonder if like Penelope Ford, I like that Penelope Ford has a role in that, she's like doing something, right? But I wonder if there's like a strong enough talker in that group for the both of them.
Renee is with Max Caster, who is 0-2 in his open challenges, but they are going to continue. So he proves that you can't be better than the best. I don't know, the post acclaimed run for Max Caster is it's been a rough road.
It's been awful. And well, at least for him, like, I guess, Anthony Bowens and Billy Gunn aren't even around, but, this Caster thing, he's just like, I mean, you kind of understand what they're going for. They're just trying to make him like, like,
awful.
Yeah. Yeah. Purposely awful.
Done.
But his character is just, but it's not even entertaining.
No, like there's nothing entertaining about this. It just feels like
hang person, like I don't know,
man. None of this is clicking. Ricochet comes out in the embassy robe, and this is the first time I think we get the mention of Jimmy Rave by Ian Riccaboni. And Ricochet insults Phoenix as a poor man's Las Vegas, and he's trying to leave this city just like Kevin Durant. And he brings up his win over Swerve from 2 weeks ago, and then beating Will, beating Darby, beating Commander, and winners always have something to show for it, and he's got this robe. But he's not just content with the robe, he wants to win a title this year, and he is approached by Prince Nana, who comes out by himself, stating he asked Swerve to stay home so I could talk to you one-on-one, and you're wearing something that doesn't belong to you. Nana's been in this business for 3 decades. That robe represents pride and integrity. It represents those that I've walked down to the ring with and those that we have lost. And anyone who wears it has honor. and I never gave this to you, Ricochet, so I'm asking you to give me the robe back. And Ricochet dares Nana to take it and asks Nana, are you going to cry? I am not giving you this robe back. And out walks Ricochet. I thought overall this was a very good promo from Ricochet. I thought it was starting to go a little too lengthy once Nana came. But overall, I thought a good segment here for Ricochet. And poor Nana here, just not getting his robe back. Imagine if he had just handed him over and said, yeah, my bad. Here it is. Done.
I thought Nana sounded really good here. You know, this was maybe some of the most passionate we've actually heard him speak in AEW so far. And there's a lot of history there, you know, for this robe.
It does feel interesting of how they want to kind of position this, like how much they want to utilize Jimmy Rave. It was like Nana never brought up Jimmy Rave's name. And they hadn't mentioned Jimmy Rave at all here. And I'm curious if like Rick Abani, if that was just sort of him just explaining it, because I think that's the only time they have like linked Jimmy Rave so specifically to the robe, and Nana like avoided name dropping him as well during the promo, which you would have thought like maybe he would have to explain why this is so important.
Yeah, they've only alluded to it, and I who knows maybe what the reason is why they haven't been more blatant with it. But I mean, I guess if you know, you know, that sort of thing, you know. The fact that they're putting so much attention to it makes me really hope that they have a replica of that robe made so Ricochet could destroy it.
I think they got like three. I think they're ready.
Oh, I hope so.
I think
that'll be as painful as the house burning.
That is when you will get Nana crying, I think, on camera. Yeah. So I could see that being the big angle. And then the main event is Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy. Cassidy, who has not wrestled since the Fight for the Fallen special on January 1st. So he's been out for like about 6-7 weeks.
He's got the Jane back.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He did come out to Jane here. Jim Ross is on commentary, and Cassidy goes to the floor hugging his conglomeration pal, Kyle O'Reilly, but then he just glares at Adam Cole. And then Strong comes down. He hugs both Kyle and Adam Cole. And, you know, they go way back. I think Roderick Strong was whispering into Adam Cole's ear, remember when I turned on Pete Dunne and joined you guys to form the Undisputed Era back in 2018? Like, yeah, that was a great night in New
Orleans. NXT TakeOver New Orleans. Relive it on Rewind Away tomorrow.
Yeah. So we get Cassidy with the hands in the pockets as he makes his comeback after being beaten down. Stun Dog gets stopped. They had some great like counters and reversals here. The End of Heartache is stopped with an arm drag into a satellite DDT by Cassidy. Hits the beach break, but Strong kicks out. Hits variations of the backbreaker, End of Heartache, and then goes for the Stronghold, but it's countered for a roll-up. And then does a pop-up, kicking Cassidy in the ribs, hits the sick kick, and then the End of Heartache is turned into the Stun Dog, and Cassidy follows with the Orange Punch, pinning Strong to set up Orange Cassidy against Konosuke Takeshita next Wednesday for the international title. So this setup of this international championship series, because Omega got the pin on Takeshita, they're positioning this like he's got all the power here. But basically, this is a tournament to determine who gets to defend the title against Kenny Omega,
as opposed to the opposite.
But there is a reason for this. Like, they're treating Omega pinned Takeshita, and that gives him like this power, essentially, to be the challenger at the pay-per-view. So I don't think it's ridiculous, but it is kind of backwards of a typical tournament.
Yeah, sure. I don't mind it ultimately, but I did find myself not caring so much about the outcome of this match, because I do feel like it's going to be Takeshita and Omega at the very end. That seems very telegraphed.
Unless they're going to do a three-way, which they were teasing at the end of this. I think that's the only other possibility here, just because they certainly went further than I thought they would have, teasing Omega with Cassidy as well.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Shivani interviews Cassidy, tees up the match when the Don Callis family comes out, and he calls Orange a red-headed hippie and sends Takeshita and Mark Davis to attack him. Mark Davis, against his will, his power of attorney gone, and was a more than willing accomplice here. And they're beating down Cassidy when Omega comes out, and together him and Cassidy fight off Takeshita and Mark Davis, including a V-trigger and orange punch delivered to Takeshita. And then Kenny holds up the international title, stares at Takeshita, and then turns, and there is Orange Cassidy, and we get a dramatic standoff between them two. And that was Dynamite.
That was, yeah. I mean, I would say this particular segment, like, pretty by the numbers, you know, just pushing this tournament and the possibility of Kenny and Orange Cassidy vying for that championship. But overall, like, I was pretty positive on this edition of Dynamite. I thought, like, again, pacing was really strong. I thought they gave appropriate focus to anybody that needed it. A lot of, like, good moments for babyfaces looking strong here, you know, between the Ops, between Hobbs. I would even say Timeless Toni Storm coming out here and just basically having a celebration without any sort of, like, heat built generating.
It's a good point. Like, there were a lot of, like, big, like, that is something that they have gone so counter to, is just putting their baby faces over in big segments. And they did a fair, like, you do see, like, the emergence of like Hangman in all of this. Mm-hmm. You had Cope in a big segment that needed something after Saturday. I thought this was like a step below last week's Dynamite, but I was very high on last week's Dynamite. But I thought this was still like continuing a string, I think, of like very good TV that AEW is putting out. And I'm sensing we're going to have a really strong Revolution. Like, the way this card is shaping up, it feels like it's going to be another really, really strong card. And I think that they're building it really well, too. It's not just, you know, matches for the sake of matches. Like, it's like the Hangman MJF stuff, I think, has been the strongest stuff on AEW television at the moment. And that feels like a solid, solid number two match on the pay-per-view.
Agreed. Yeah. Do you think the Bucks will be back before Revolution?
You would think like LA would be a great place to have them come back. I mean, now that they've dropped the tag titles, I can't throw out the notion that they announce like the Bucks returning at the pay-per-view as a potential.
Or maybe they save it for the surprise at the event itself after the Hurt Syndicate match.
That's possible too. That's a weird match to come back to for the Bucks. Mm-hmm. Like that, because that is going to be the ultimate. Maybe they're just going to have to come out and explain like the whole Tony Khan feud, all of that stuff. It was all a dream. We're just let's pretend it's 2021.
Yeah.
It's going to be an awkward return storyline wise for them, but I don't know how much longer you would want them on the sidelines.
They're ready to come back to work,
tag belts.
They said.
Yeah. Right. Well, there is our review of Dynamite. If you want to share your thoughts, you can always go into the comment section, leave your feedback. Just simply say, you guys nailed every point. Perfect.
Or you can go to the now reopened forum.postwrestling.com where accounts are free. So join there, sign up, and leave your thoughts. I want to give a shout out especially to Jack Wanon has been doing these daily threads compiling.
They're great. You
know, our top stories of the day and encouraging questions and everything like that. So go to forum.postwrestling.com, sign up for a free account, and leave your thoughts on the news of the day.
All right. We're going to say goodbye to the people on the YouTube channel. But for all you Post Wrestling Cafe members, sit back because we are now going to get into some of your feedback. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.